Bhartaya Pratibodhitam Bhagavata Narayanena Swayam Vyasena Kratitam Purana Munina Madhye Mahabharatam Advaitamrita Varshinim Bhagavatim Ashtadashadhyayinim Tambatvam Anusantatami Bhagavad Gita Bhavadvaishini. We're on verse 33, chapter 6, 33. Arjuna Uvacha. Arjuna Uvacha. Yoyam Yogastvaya Proktaha. Yoyam Yogastvaya Proktaha. Samyena Madhusudana. Samyena Madhusudana. Etasyaham Napashyami. Etasyaham Napashyami. Chanchalatvat Stitim Stiram. Chanchalatvat Stitim Stiram. Arjuna Uvacha. Arjuna said, Yaha Ayam Yogaha Tvaya Proktaha Samyena Madhusudana Etasya Aham Na Pashyami Chanchalatvat Stitim Stiram. Now, after Bhagavan has been teaching all about yoga, contemplation, nishtha, who is the karma yogi, who is the jnani, who is the one that has jnana nishtha, all of the different means for gaining that jnana nishtha, and then some the verses on meditation, how to do meditation, all of these things he's gone through. Now Arjuna, and in the last verse, what does he say? He ends up saying, hey Arjuna, it's the one who sees everywhere that samatva, that samam, the same, Brahman. The only thing that's the same is Brahman. In all of our experience, the only thing where that samat or samyam, that sameness is there, that is Brahman. So the one really who sees Brahman everywhere, that which is the same everywhere, with the self as the upama, as the basis, even in sukha and in dukkha, that person is the most exalted yogi. So these last verses he's been talking about the one who really has jnana nishtha. So now Arjuna says, so Arjuna Uvacha, these two verses he says, Yaha Ayam Yogaha Tvaya Proktaha. This yoga which is being told by you. Yaha means which. Ayam Yogaha, this yoga. Yaha, which, Tvaya, by you, Proktaha, has been told. So all of this that you've been talking about, the karma yoga, the contemplation, and then the jnana nishtha, all of this is yoga. So there's a lot of different ways yoga is being used here. So, but this yoga, and now the yoga has been resolving in that samatvam, the one who sees that samatvam, that's the jnana nishtha, that's the culmination, that yoga is the culmination, the one who sees the same, sees that which is summoned the same in all experience, in all beings, in all experience, in sukha and dukkha, the one who sees that, Brahman. So that one who sees, that's the yoga now, the one who sees that vision. So this yoga, which has been taught by you, samyena, this yoga concerning this samatvam, this sameness, which is taught by you, hey Madhusudana. Madhusudana is a name for Krishna, means the one who destroys the demon Madhu. That's the name of, in the mythology, there's a demon named Madhu, and Krishna in battle is a destroyer of this demon Madhu. But Madhu also means that which is sweet. And so Madhusudana is also the one who destroys the ahankara. The ahankara is that which we're most attached to. Actually, it's the name of the word I, so the ahankara. There's nothing more dear to you than your being, But then the being is taken to be the body, mind, sense organs, and so that ahankara actually is such a, because of ajnana, is such a source of bondage. So Madhusudana is often means the one who is the one who destroys that honey, you know, the honey which is the ahankara. So Swamiji has a nice H-O-N-E-Y, sweetness. So Swamiji has a nice unfoldment of that. Okay. So yoyam yoga tvaya proptah samyena Madhusudana. Then he says, so you've been talking about this yoga as that samyatvam, as that samya, that state of sameness. He says, etasya aham na pashyami. He says, I am not able to see. Na pashyami, aham na pashyami, chanchalatvat, because of the chanchalatvat, because of the anxiety, the motion. Chanchala means motion. Swamiji, in his Bhasha on this, as you'll see, he translates that as agitation. You have to be a little careful of that word agitation, because he doesn't, when we think in the, when, if we think of agitation, normally we think of an agitated, means I'm annoyed or I'm angry. But here he's not using agitation like that. It's like if you had a jar of water and you were shaking it, the water would be agitated. It means it's moving. You know, it's not constant. It's not stable. So that's how the word agitation is, in Swamiji's translation, is being used. It's fickle. It's moving. It's not stable at all. It's moving is a good word. That's very benign. It's moving. It's not staying still. So moving. That's chanchalatvat. Because my mind is always moving. You know, it's always flitting. From one, that's the chanchala, it's always flitting from one thing to the other. It's always moving. It never just stays the same. So because of the chanchalatvam, I don't see this samyatvam. I don't see this sameness. I don't see this stittim stiram, this stable state. Stittim means a state. So you can call it this vision, this state. I don't see this. This state as a stable. I don't see the stable state of sameness. Etasya stands for the sameness. So because my mind is always moving, there is no stable state. It's always changing, it's always moving, it's flitting about, it's flickering. You know, and so I'm not able to see any kind of anything stable because of this chanchalatvam of the mind. So he says, so to recap the verse, his first question is this. So he says, this yoga that you're taught to Krishna, this yoga that's being taught by you, this yoga which is about this samyatvam, the seeing the sameness, hey Madhusudana, you know, I don't see that. I'm not able to see this stable, stitim, stiram, this state which is stable. I'm not able to see this stable state of this samyatvam that you're talking about, of this sameness. I don't see it. He doesn't say I'm not able to see it. He says, nepashami, aham nepashami. I do not see. I do not see that stable state. Why? Chanchalatvam. Because my mind is always changing. And so then he goes on to finish his thought. So this is Arjuna speaking some more. He says, Chanchalam hi manak Krishna, Chanchalam hi manak Krishna, Pramati palavat vidham, Pramati palavat vidham, Tasyaham nigraham manye, Tasyaham nigraham manye, Vayoriva sudushkaram, Vayoriva Sudushkaram Chanchalam I Manaha Krishna Pramati Balavat Vridham Tasya Aham Nigraham Manye Vayoho Iva Sudushkaram. He says, Hey Krishna, He says he means because. Chanchala mind. This chanchala manaha, this moving mind, this my mind which is always, you know, changing, this changing mind, chanchala manaha, hey Krishna, because this mind which is changing, he says, is pramati. It is like a tyrant. This changing mind is a pramati. It's a tyrant and it's bulava. It has great strength. Bula means strength. But here, but, you know, can mean like strength, or it has two meanings. Here it's that but affix going on to a noun that means possessed of. So this, it's a demon which has strength, possessed of bula, possessed of strength, not a demon, but a tyrant. They're possessed of strength, which is dridham, which is very well rooted. Like sometimes we use for gaining nishta, instead of jnana nishta, we'll say dridhagnanam. Dridham means jnanam, which is well rooted. We use the example, you know, like if you are putting a post in a post hole. To make it dridham, well rooted, you first dig the post hole, then you put the post in it. And then you have to pound it with earth. You fill it with earth and then pound that earth in and then fill it with more, pound the earth in until that post can't be moved. So he says like that, the mind is like that. This tyrant. The mind is this tyrant. This mind that is continually flitting about, always changing. It's like a tyrant that's very strong and well-rooted in its ways. That's the idea. It's a well-rooted in its ways because of beginningless ignorance. How could it not be well-rooted? It couldn't be more well-rooted. We have beginningless lives, beginningless ajnanam. And so the habits of the mind, the kartritvam, the doership, the enjoyership, you know, the ahankara, all of these things are very stable. You know, they're so stable that there's never been, even they've never been even questioned. In fact, it's considered a great punya for that question to be asked. What is this mind? Who am I? You know, the who am I question? That's considered a great punya. So that if somebody were to ask, who am I and what is really going on here? What is the truth of my being? What is the truth of my existence? That's considered a great punya because there's no need, really, for you to ask that question. In fact, sometimes when Swamiji begins teaching from scratch to new students, he'll spend a lot of time on this who am I question. Because that who am I is always answered. Like if you're in the classroom, you're a student and the teacher's a teacher. If you're at home, you're the daughter or you're the son and your parents are there. If you're with your sister, you know, then you're the sister or brother. If you're with your friend, then you're the friend. Your situation is continually answered by the environment and the people that you find yourself with, you know. If you're, every experience that you have has a point of identity, you know. It's either a point of identity in terms of relation, in terms of your age, in terms of your health, in terms of your wealth, in terms of your station in life, all of these things. It doesn't make any difference as long as there's a new upadhi there. You can identify with that, and then I am that. So the upadhis give so many excuses for identification. It's absolutely natural. So the ahankara always has a place to land. You know? So you don't have to ever be confronted with this, well, who am I really? Right? Because you always are somebody or something in a given situation. Right? So that's considered, you know, such a great... great punya to have the inner space, the peace of mind to allow for a different type of reflection, you know, a more introspective reflection. Great punya. So that's what he says, you know, this mind, this chanchala mind, this mind that is just, it is always, always moving just by nature, you know. It is like in its nature, what it is like a very strong tyrant that is firmly established in its ways, is the idea. So then he says, Tasya aham nigraham manye. He says, aham manye, I think that this is nigraham dushkaram. Nigraham means to control, the control of this. Tasya nigraham. I think that the control, the being able to hold on to, the control of this mind, the control of this mind is dushkaram. It's very difficult. It means hard. This is, to be able to control this mind, this is, you know, impossible. This is very, very hard to do, he says. He says, hard like what? This is difficult to control. This mind is difficult to control. Vayoho eva, just like the wind. Try to grasp the wind or control the wind or bottle up the wind. That's very, very hard to do. It's very slippery. And like that, the mind. My mind is so slippery. How could I ever, you know, bring it into any type of equipoise? How could I do that to be able to appreciate any samatvam, because my mind is always engaged with itself. It's engaged with this or engaged with that. And then it's also talking to itself about all of the things that it's engaged in. So how can I become still enough to even appreciate something that is the same when all I'm doing is flitting around indifference? So that's Arjuna's question. Now, Swamiji brought out an interesting point in this commentary just on this question. He said was, you know, Arjuna in the Mahabharata is an exemplar for a dharmi, someone who's an embodiment of dharma, who's lived a very, you know, righteous life, who has done those things that are to be done and avoided the things that are not to be done. And so because of his dharma, his mind is in a sense going to be a mind of a person. Well, let me put it this way. A dharma makes the mind very agitated. A dharma, a person who gets involved with a dharma, will be having feelings of guilt all of the time, or feelings of anxiety and lack of trust, and all kinds of things are going to be going on in that mind as a result of the adharma. The dharmi is not going to be suffering from those type of anxieties. But, and so here's Arjuna, who's a dharmi, you know, who's also a mumukshu, a dharmi and a mumukshu. Because he's now gone to Krishna and asked to be his sisha. So he's recognized the problem. He's become a mumukshu. He's lived a dharmic life. And that dharmi is talking about the mind as being something that, you know, he doesn't see. How can I possibly, you know, bring this mind under control? It's like trying to catch the wind. How can I do that? By nature, this mind is just moving all the time, flitting about. That's what it does. And so, by Arjuna asking this question, what a person understands is that, that's right. And this is how Krishna is going to answer it. That's right. That is how the mind is. The mind is something that is naturally changing all of the time. And what if it didn't? What if the mind wasn't something that was changing all of the time? How could it do function? It's its very swarupa, it's its very nature. It must be changing with every perception that you have, with every thought that you have, with every emotion that you have. It's changing continually. And if it didn't, you couldn't perceive. You'd have one perception, you'd be stuck there. You'd have one thought, you'd be stuck there. One emotion, you'd be stuck there. But the mind is not like that. The mind is very, very fluid. That's its nature, and that's how the mind has to be. And so it's not going to be a question of the mind not being fluid. It's not a problem of the mind being fluid or not being fluid. So this is what now Krishna has to kind of explain. He understands exactly, as we'll see, he understands exactly what Arjuna is talking about and agrees with him. He agrees with him, and especially, I mean, you'll see on many levels he agrees, because also The mind, it is, by nature, it is very fluid. And also, it is tyrannical in its commitment, in its nishta. You know, it's well-rooted in ajnanam, in the habits formed of ajnanam. It's well-rooted in that. That is true. And so now Krishna is going to take up Arjuna's question. So let's look at what he has to say. Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Shri Bhagavan Uvacha, Asam Shayam Mahabaho, Asam Shayam Mahabaho, Mano Dur Nigrahan Chalam, Mano Dur Nigrahan Chalam, Apyasena Tukanteya, Apyasena Tukanteya, Vairagena Chakrahyate, Vairagena Chakrahyate. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha, Sri Bhagavan says, Asamshayam Mahabaho Manaha Dur Nigraham Chalam Abhyasena Tu Kaunteya Vairagyena Chagrihyate. Bhagavan says, Asamshayam, without doubt, an adverb, without doubt, comma, undoubtedly, Asamshayam, He Mahabaho. Now, Mahabaho means the one who has mighty arms, you know, but it means the one who has great strength, is a great warrior, is Mahabaho, one who has great hands, great arms, very strong, so the great warrior, so it's a name for Arjuna. So, He Mahabaho, Manaha, the mind, Dur Nigraham, is difficult to control. Nigraham means control. Dur means that difficult. The mind is Dur Nigraham. It is difficult to control. It is Chalam. The mind is moving. It is fickle. It is flighty. By its very nature, it's always moving. It never stays in one place. It's always changing. That's its nature, Chalam. So that manas is Chalam. It's always moving. It is Dur Nigraham. It is very difficult to control. He says, but it says, Abhyasena, but by Abhyasa. We'll see what these two words mean now. By Abhyasa, by practice. Vairagyena cha. And by vairagya. We've got two things. It's by abhyasa and by vairagya grihyate. It is grasped. So the mind can be grasped, right? Can be controlled, can be handled. This mind, which by its nature is difficult to control and which is always changing, it's something that through abhyasa, through practice and through these two, practice and vairagya, that samyatvam is going to be gained. Okay, so that's the idea. So here, I'm going to talk quite a bit about this, but I want you to be sure to read the handout. Swamiji goes into, on this particular verse, maybe 7 or 8 pages, going through what exactly is meant by abhyasa and vairagya. Okay. So, abhyasa means repeatedly seeing. You can call it contemplation, but Swamiji does it a little bit more broadly than that. He'll call it meditation, but when you really go into to what he's saying and what we mean by abhyasa. Abhyasa generally means repetition. Repetition, if you just take the meaning of the word, repetition or practice. Okay. So what is the repetition or what is the practice? Is the being able to bring your knowledge to your situation, whatever that word may be. He says here, you know, he starts by saying, I didn't translate this, hey, Kaunteya. The first epithet he gives, that Bhagavan gives to Arjuna, is, hey, Mahabaho, O strong warrior. The second one is, O son of Kunti. It means he's bringing, you know, the person and the child in, the child in, as well as the great warrior. And so, by the Abhyasa, how do bring the mind into let's put it like this. We can say that up to this point, Krishna has really given Arjuna this teaching. Right? The reason throughout several times, Swamiji will say, and even Shankar will say in the Bhasha, okay, the teaching is complete now. Right? Now we're in the sixth chapter, in the second chapter, the teaching is complete now. But Arjuna comes with a question. And so, oh, okay, then we have to go again because of the question. Now he's come with another question. But in fact, here at this point now, the teaching is complete. Krishna has really given the whole vision. But now, when he's given this vision, he's gone over it and over it in so many different ways. So there, in terms of vision, there can be clarity here, in terms of vision. But then Arjuna says, but how can my mind, you know, how can my mind hold this? How can I see this when my mind is just moving all around? How can I have gainishta in this? How can I really own it up? You know, how can I walk around seeing this when my mind is always moving, you know, drifting away? And so Krishna says, you know, that is true. The mind is always moving. It's always going here or there. It is hard, difficult to catch it. And besides that, what's causing it to move, right, are all of the lifetime, we'll just say one lifetime, let alone beginningless lifetimes, of habitual ways of thinking, right? We have all kinds of habits. We have all kinds of free association. In fact, they've done a lot of studies. Even Jung himself did studies on the mind. Just to track the nature of the mind, what makes it think what it thinks. It's free association, right? If I ask you one, like if I say hot, probably cold comes. But then after that, say I say hot, then probably your mind may think, often will go to the office and think cold. But then for all of us, now what comes? There'll be some, it'll bring some memory, and that will bring something else, and that will bring something else, and that will be something else. So the mind has a life of its own. And the life of its own that it has, either you're perceiving something and engaged in something, or it's taking off on its own through free association, which is connecting all of the prior memories that you have, all of the prior emotions that you have. Everything is getting triggered all the time by the current experiences that you have. That's why we talk so much about, in psychology, we talk so much about projection. Because actually you're just experiencing something in the world, and somebody raises their eyebrow and that reminds you of the way your mother used to raise her eyebrow when she was angry, and then you have the emotion that the mother caused, you know, and then that gets projected onto that person, and then a relationship is started with that person that is based upon the mother, but you don't realize that it's based upon the mother, and so now you're living in a make-believe world of projection. You know, and so all of this is happening all of the time to us. And the mind is doing it all by itself. You know, because of free association. It's the nature of the mind to be connecting things. But you have to realize that your mind is naturally free associating with whatever is going on in the present, but also with whatever has gone on in the past. In other words, it's free associating with everything that makes up your mind, all of the past and all of the past and the present and future projections all together. So if something happens, some situation happens, and what is going to be triggered in your mind, because your mind, all of the vrittis are interconnected through memory, Right? So what is going to be triggered? What emotions are going to be triggered? What memories are going to be triggered? How do we know? The mind knows what route it's going to take. See what I mean? How could you possibly know? When the interconnections, when the experiences are infinite, and the interconnections are infinite. So something happens is way beyond you to have any idea what routes are going to be excited by that given experience. And so, in that sense, the mind is like a tyrant, if you want to look at it that way. It happens to be how Arjuna is looking at it. It's like, my God, this is way beyond me. I don't have any control over what thoughts rise. Swamiji uses an example in his bhasha. He says, say somebody's, you know, starting to meditate, they're meditating, and all of a sudden they start thinking of okra. Okra is a vegetable that's common in India. So, why? You're meditating. Why on earth are you starting to think about okra? Now, you probably don't know yourself. And you probably have to sit and think, why on earth would I be still thinking about okra? I mean, you can meditate on that and you can get some association, oh, this led to that, this led to that, which is a good thing to do. So you can understand what's happening. But your mind didn't ask you your permission. You know, it didn't say, would it be all right if I think about okra now that you're starting to meditate? No? It doesn't ask you. It doesn't ask you when you're just sitting having a conversation with somebody and they raise their eyebrow. It didn't ask you, do you mind if I project all of my mother stuff on that eyebrow? It doesn't ask. It does it. That's why Arjuna is saying, you know, it's like a tyrant. It is ruling me. I'm not ruling it. And it's so strong. It has its ways. You've given me all of this knowledge. I see it so clearly. But how can I handle this mind that is a tyrant in the sense that it has a life of its own and it's ruling me? I'm not telling it what to think. It is thinking. It is thinking me. It is feeling me. Right? So what to do? How to gain nishta? How can this knowledge, in fact, become something which is holding the mind rather than the mind holding me? So this is what Krishna now is going to answer. He says, it is true that this mind, you know, it is difficult like that. It's true. And so it's behaving in all kinds of ways that now are not true to what you know, not true to what you've understood, not true to what you've seen. So what to do? Two things, abhyasa and vairagya. Abhyasa means whatever the situation means. In fact, for vocabulary, I'm going to put this up, and Swamiji quotes it. It's very famous. It goes, yatra, yatra manoyati. I may have already put that, I don't think so. Yatra, yatra manoyati. Wherever, yatra, yatra, wherever the manas, wherever the mind yati goes, yatra yatra mano yati, wherever the mind goes, tetra 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 samadhiya, there is my samadhi. Wherever the mind goes, there is my samadhi. So what does he mean? What does that mean? We quote this, this is a famous quote. It means that every experience that I have, first of all, every experience that I have, there is nama-rupa, there's the experience, the emotion, whatever it happens to be, it doesn't matter, whatever the experience that I have, myself is there. There's the experience that has for itself me. So that is a given. There is no experience that doesn't have me for itself. And so therefore, wherever the mind goes, if I recognize myself in that situation, that is samadhi. It doesn't make any difference. Whatever the thought is, whether it be a perception, whether it be emotion, whether it be a complex, whatever type of thought is, whether it be a memory, It makes absolutely no difference. That thought, whatever that thought is, in that thought, let me bring my knowledge. What does that mean, to bring my knowledge into the thought? Well, factually, in terms of what is there in the thought, right? Is the experience, whatever the experience of the thought is, and myself, the Sat Chit Namarupa, the conscious being, the me, and the name and form. Now, what would it mean to bring my knowledge to bear upon that thought? Is to simply recognize that truth, to see that truth. That's what it means. If you know yourself, if you've recognized yourself through this teaching, through your contemplative practice, your nididhyasana, you know, the shravana manana nididhyasana, you've recognized yourself, then the problem is not a lack of self-knowledge. It's this tyrant of the mind, not to be mean to the mind, just to, I'm not calling it as a tyrant in a negative way, it's just the fact that the mind has all of its associations based in ajnanam. All of its associations based in ajnanam and the different hurts and habits that has caused. You know? That's what we're dealing with. And so you can't expect that the mind isn't going to find its way there into every nook and cranny, every problem that exists in your psyche, every pain that exists in your psyche, every projection that's possible, the mind will make it. Because it will find a way to get there through free association. It'll find its way there. And so, that being the case, how do I deal with that? What has to happen is that I have to bring my knowledge into those situations. Sometimes we look at it like this. Say you gain knowledge, you know yourself. But then the different habits of the mind will rise up, you know, and behave as though you don't know. So what do you do when it does that? That habit or that complex or whatever it is, it's rising up into the buddhi, which now has knowledge. And so now the buddhi can bring to that situation its knowledge, which is what? A recognition of my being, a recognition of the mittatva of the thought, a recognition of my being. There's many, many different ways of saying this. A recognition of my being as the changeless self of the thought, the recognition of the ananda or the wholeness of my being that is present in that thought, whatever it may be. All of the inner child work that we do in order to bring a distance between myself, a distance in the sense of bringing a relationship between myself and the thought, myself and the pain. All of these things are management tools, right? That bring myself, that bring my knowledge into the picture. So every time I get my mind gets taken away by a complex or gets taken away into one of these three associative patterns. It gets me into a situation where I'm away from my own ananda or from my own samyatva, my own stability, my own recognition of the self in the situation. Then all I need to do is that abhyasa. And I do need to do the abhyasa. I do need to bring my knowledge in. You know, because that's how the mind gains nishta. If I don't bring the knowledge into it, then that condition just keeps on occurring. But if I bring my knowledge in, then that condition then becomes assimilated into my knowledge and it loses its power. That's what happens. It loses its power. The time I really realized this, that was absolutely so shocking to me, but it's actually very experience I'm really grateful for. I'd been in India for several years without coming back at all. For 3 or maybe 3 years or so before I came back once for 6 months. So. And so I had been living only at the ashram, only going to classes and just kind of totally being with my knowledge. And it's not that we didn't have any problems at the ashram. There were problems, some problems there. But whatever problems I had at home or with people at home were long gone. I had totally forgotten about them. You know, and there was nothing to bring them up at all because I was in a totally different environment and totally different person, really, and just, you know, living in this kind of contained environment, just studying. And so whatever problems I had left at home, I had truly left them at home, you know, until I went home, came back to the Bay Area, you know, and then these feelings and reactions that had literally been lying dormant for the three or four years that I'd been gone, they had just been lying there dormant. I hadn't seen them for years. There they are. Out of the blue, there they are. I was absolutely flabbergasted. I was shocked. But the great thing about it, I also understood, you know, that's why in the whole Bhagavad Gita they say, you know, you can't run away. It doesn't help you to run away, like to run off to the Himalayas, you know, and think you'll work these things out there. You have to stay in your area. You have to stay. You have to work out your problems, what your problems are. But what I found was that now, you know, I had been studying for a long time and very much in this knowledge. I mean, that was a long time ago, and I wouldn't say the strength of knowledge that I have now, but still, I had a lot of strength of knowledge. And so what it was like was that these problems would come up, but they were coming up, same problem, same emotion, but now they were coming up into a different person. A person who had knowledge, a person who had a way of handling her mind and of being with those problems, and had a way of dealing with it, a way of seeing it that was much different. And so even though those same problems would come up, now they were coming up into somebody who handled them differently, and had a different vision. And so those problems, you know, worked themselves out in the light of the vision that they were now coming up into. Before, they were coming up into somebody that didn't have that knowledge. And so that makes all of the difference in the world. You know, now with the mind comes up with its problems and its habitual hurts and ways of thinking, it's coming up into a different buddhi. It's coming up to somebody who has a different clarity, a different understanding. And then with that way of holding those problems sort themselves out. And the tremendous affect and hurt and all those three reactions that those problems hold, they sort themselves out. But now that's abhyasa, right? Because it has to come up into a mind that has knowledge. And then the mind that has knowledge then is holding that problem. And until the mind that has knowledge, the buddhi that has knowledge, is holding and dealing with that problem is a tyrant. Right? Until your knowledge comes to hold and be with that knowledge in all of the ways that we discussed, including all of the inner child work, inner friend, all of these different ways, and then the satya mitya, recognizing the presence of my being, you know, in that complex. So all of these things are bringing my knowledge to that given complex. That is abhyasa. And that is something that we do over and over and over again, you know, until... The abhyasa is especially, we'll see vairagya in a minute, the abhyasa is something we especially do toward the pain in the mind, the things that cause pain. We bring our knowledge to that situation. And the knowledge involves all that we've learned. Not just the recognition of myself and the mityatva of the of the experience. It's not just that. That's important also, to recognize the stability of myself in the experience. But to recognize that really, I can even say like this, the stability of myself, the swarupa, the nature of that self, is the what we evoke when we invoke the inner friend. If I invoke a good mother to be with that hurt part, the swarupa, the ananda, the wholeness, the strength, the stability of the good mother is the self. So in a way, whether I, in dealing with my mind, I use imagination to bring the swami, or to bring the mentor, to bring the good mother, to bring the good parent, the good friend, to be with the part that's hurt. That's very powerful, very effective, and very helpful to the hurt part. But to understand what is underneath all of that, what is the strength that I'll use good mother, what is the strength that the good mother has, or the swami has? What is the ananda? What is the love? What is the wholeness? What is the well-being? What is the inner friendness? It's the self. That is the very swarupa of the self. Right? And so it is that well-being, that wholeness, that ananda, that is there as the constant. That is the samya. Samya means that is the stable one. And so we evoke that stable one, just like it's the same. I can evoke Ishwara. I can just be in, I means us. I can be in dialogue with Ishwara as the whole. Just the whole. The whole universe, the conscious being, which is my own being, which is this whole, the whole manifest knowledge. I can be in relationship with Ishwara as this infinite manifest knowledge, which is the whole, which is the self. Or I can be in dialogue with Ishwara in the form of Krishna. I can evoke Ishwara, the Lord, in the form of Krishna, or in the form of Shiva, or in the form of any deity, or in the form of any God image that I have. It doesn't make any difference. I can invoke the whole in any form, and then have a dialogue with Bhagavan in that form. It doesn't make any difference. I can evoke the Lord in any form that I want, whatever's convenient for me, or whatever is my Ishta Devata, whatever form, you know, holds the inner friend. Whatever form holds the being of the self, I could invoke the Lord in that form. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, you know, in whatever form you invoke me, in that form I come to you. That's Ishwara he's talking. In whatever form, you know, you invoke me, in that form I come to you. So now, in terms of being with the mind, I can let the mind be held by the self. I can let the mind be held by a good mother who is an embodiment of the self. I can let the mind be held by the Lord, which is an embodiment of the self, you know, or by the good father, or by Swamiji, by your teacher, or whatever evokes peace in the mind, right? Whatever evokes the sense of being held by the part that is hurting, I can evoke that. There comes a time when whatever form you invoke, or whether you invoke a form or not, what is holding the mind is the self. And that self, the self, between the self and the emotion, or the self and the feeling, or the self and the perception, there's a satya-mitya difference, in the sense that the stable one, right, is not affected, that which is the same, Brahman, is not affected by the hurt or the changes that the mind is going through. And therefore, because not affected, and because its nature is wholeness, therefore the mind is soothed by the very presence of yourself. And so sometimes you may evoke, you know, an image of an inner friend to help the mind, or sometimes your being is the inner friend, and that is holding the mind. But that all, in that environment, the mind can relax and feel held, and then you bring your knowledge. You recognize, you let the mind realize that that inner friend, the Atma, that which is the same, the fullness of your being, is all that you seek. The Ananda that you're seeking in any situation is only that. It's already here. And the situation, in fact, can't give it to you because you already have it. Situation has never given it to you. It cannot give it to you. You already have it. Now that, once we get into that type of thinking, that's the vairagya. The vairagya is the abhyasa we more use. You want to make this distinction. The abhyasa is always bringing my mind back. When it becomes lost, I bring it back to my vision. The vairagya is just looking at it a different way. The vairagya is bringing back what we call the shobhana adhyasa. Shobhana adhyasa is that projection of ananda onto the situation. You know, it's like, I want this so that I can be happy, or I need to have this so that I can be happy. So there's a loss of objectivity that takes my mind out, because the mind by its nature, without your permission or with your permission, it doesn't care, it will go toward ananda only. And so if the ananda is projected out, that's where the mind will go. It will go toward ananda also in a negative way. If pain is lurking over here, it will make sure not to go there. Right? It wants to go toward wholeness. If the wholeness, it wants to go, really, just naturally, it wants to go toward its own self. If the self, the Atma, is projected out onto something, that's where your mind will go. You know? If it looks like the Atma is being taken hurt somewhere, it'll go away from that. You don't have to work at that. It'll just do it by itself. And so the vairagya, what vairagya is, sometimes it's translated as dispassion. But what the vairagya is really removing the shobhana adhyasa. Adhyasa means that projection. Right? It means projecting something. Adhyasa is projecting something on something else. Shobhana means projecting something of beauty, means projecting the ananda. Shobhana adhyasa is the projecting something that I like on something else. Like, I want that because that is something that will give me happiness. That's why I want it. That is something of value. So I project a value on things that the thing doesn't have. Swamiji goes quite a bit in this. He uses different examples. Like, for a big one is money. A lot of shobhana adhyasa gets put on money. It's not that, as he says, it's not that money isn't doesn't have its value. I mean, on a practical level, money makes a lot of things easier. It does things. You know, it's useful. Money is useful. That's objective. But what isn't objective is to say, you know, if I don't have money, I'm worthless. That's putting a value on money that money doesn't have. Or if I have a lot of money, I will be a very worthwhile person. I'll be very important. So your self-esteem then becomes something which is associated with something that is actual, has practical value, but to project that on it, no, that doesn't belong there. And so, in terms of vairagya, what has to be done is the projections have to be withdrawn. The shobhana adhyasa, where I put something of, I said, this, if I have this, then I will become whole. If I have this, then I will become complete. If I have this, then I will be worth something. I will be worthwhile. That sense of worthwhile, you know what the sense of worthwhile is? It's the Atma. The sense of well-being, Atma. You know, sense of being loved, Atma. That is the swarupa of the Atma. That's the very swarupa of the self. You know, but that swarupa of the self, what is you, who you actually are, gets projected on all of these things. If I had a good job, if I got a raise, then I would be a worthwhile person. Yeah. Yes. So the vairagya is bringing the shobhana adhyasa back, the retracting the shobhana adhyasa, to becoming practical, with myself. You go get Penny Titty. She needs her toes bit. Okay, so here he says, so it's by the abhyasa and by the vairagya. Even though true, the Arjuna, it's true. These things are difficult. The mind is difficult. You can't just take it for granted. You have to bring your knowledge back. You have to bring your knowledge to. You have to bring your knowledge to your life. But you have to do that until you don't have to do it. You have to do it until that knowledge. You know, they use the example of if you have in the Gita they use the example, if you're to build a huge bonfire out on the beach, so you build a huge bonfire, and you have to light it. But you're going to light just one corner of it. And to get that huge bonfire to become a conflagration, you need to protect that little corner for a while. You have to protect it from, you've got to protect it from the wind. You've got to fan it, protect it from the wind so that it doesn't get blown out. But after a while, that bonfire becomes strong enough that the wind will just make it rage all the more. You know? And that's the situation with the mind. At first, you know, all of these associations, all of these habits, all of these complexes, all of these things are kind of overwhelming your little knowledge. You know, you've got this little corner of knowledge and all of these vrittis, you know, are coming at it. And so it needs to be protected for a while. You know, that's why you keep satsang, you keep coming to class, you keep studying until it's strong enough, your understanding is strong enough that the vrittis come into the fire. They don't blow out the fire. They come into the fire of your knowledge. And then your knowledge, you know, handles them and they work themselves out. That's the process of nishtha. That's the process that you find for yourself as you grow in this knowledge anyway. Your knowledge becomes stronger and stronger with more and more clarity. And you gain more kaushalam, more skill at just being able to handle the mind, because you understand what the mind is. You understand what its problems are. You understand what the projection is. So that's how the process works. Let's stop here. You called it just perfectly. Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha. Harihi Om.